So, are there some questions?
Yes, Maharaj, could you please tell us about Parikrama and your Indian trip?
Hare Krishna. Ironically, Narottam Das Thakur's statement comes to mind, where he is saying, visiting holy places can be your own mental imposition. If one is not there under the guidance, and the guidance means, you know, the vision of the higher Vaishnavas. We shouldn't think that on our own we can decide to go there or extract something from there. There was one sannyas disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who, on his own, he decided to go to Badrinath. And this displeased Srila Saraswati Thakur, and he withdrew the sannyas from him. And it's interesting, his name was Puri Maharaj. It's not Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, it was someone else who had that name, Puri Maharaj. Later, when he came into the good graces of Saraswati Thakur, ironically, he named him Parbat Maharaj. Parbat, one meaning of it is a mountain. So he went to the mountain on his own, got the name taken away. You can say when he got the graces of Saraswati Thakur, the mountain returned. If the Muhammad cannot go to the mountain goes to Muhammad. We know even in the pastimes of Mahaprabhu that, again, I'm saying these things as a preface. We hear Gadadhar Pandit wanted Mahaprabhu's permission to visit Vrindavan. And we understand ontologically, Gadadhar Pandit is the remainder of Srimati Radharani after Krishna's plundered heart and halo and become Gauranga Mahaprabhu. So Radharani is asking and denied. The queen of Vrindavan denied by Mahaprabhu, would not give his approval. But if we think of that, then we're thinking, in one sense, it will be so painful in this context for Gadadhar Pandit to go. Mahaprabhu is preventing that. Told him rather to stay in Puri, and we know with the seva of Gopinath, and what is generally called Ketra Sannyas, to stay, vow to remain in a particular holy place, never to leave. In the case of Jagadananda Pandit, was given permission by Mahaprabhu to go, but told, while you are there, don't mix with the local people and always stay under the shelter of Srila Sanatana Goswami Prabhu. We could think, well, Jagadananda Pandit, intimate associate of Mahaprabhu, author of the Prema Bibart, appears to be giving some advice that you might think would be appropriate for a new recruit. But no less than Jagadananda Pandit is being told by Mahaprabhu, don't mix with the local people. You may not understand their practices or lack of practices or what their situation is. And always stay in the shelter of Sanatana Goswami Prabhu, under his care, his guidance. So it would seem important to factor all of these things in our approach to the Dham, Dham Parikrama. So this being the month of Kartik, and Srila Guru Maharaj says very beautifully, extracting from Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Margo Shirshaham. He's saying, of this I'm that, of this I'm that, of months, I am November, December, because it's a lunar calendar, that period. So Guru Maharaj says, if Krishna says, I'm that month, November, December, then Radharani's month must be before that, October, November. Right? Like Hare Krishna, her position will always be primary and before, revealing the month of Krishna, you can say. So it is, as we hear from Srila Guru Maharaj, a time to increase our concentration on spiritual practices and remembrance. So he himself, when he, just before arriving at the conclusion that he should establish Chaitanya Sarasvat Math, he went in the month of Kartik, and it was around 1941, in a very prayerful mood, which way he should go, how he should spend his final time. So with all, and remembering all these things, we approach very cautiously, and particularly when we consider anywhere in Vrindavan, but what to speak of the location of the Sri Chaitanya Sarasvat Math in Vrindavan. It is just adjacent to the Bhajan Kutir and Samadhi of Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Jiva Goswami, Srila Krishnas Kaviraj, Bhugarbh, others, but those three in particular. And how that came to Srila Gurudev and by expressing his heart's desire to properly worship Srila Guru Maharaj. You know, in his own Vaishnava humility, he had accepted some property on the Parikrama Marg, we can say like on the outskirts of town. That's his own humility, saying like Uddhava, saying Asamaho Charanarain Ujusham Hangshang Vrindavane Kimapi Gumilato Sadinam Yaddushtajam Svajanam Arjapatam Chihitva Bejur Mukunda Parivim Shrutibir Pramigyam. Having observed Srimati, the Braja Gopis, and particularly the divine madness of Srimati Radharani, expressed in the Brahma Gita, Uddhava's conclusion is to be a blade of grass, a creeper, an atomic presence on the soil of Vrindavan so that the dust, when Radharani and Braja Gopis are moving in service there, the dust from their holy lotus feet may come upon him, thereby consecrating his existence. That is the proper mood and expression, not to ostentatiously, voyeuristically envision oneself as a super servitor in that plane. So, Srila Gurudeva, very cautiously, very modest, accepted that place on the Parikrama Marg, on the outskirts. But then we're told, as he would told himself, that for some time, this is in the day of landlines. You may have read about them on Wikipedia. Anyway, so in the day of landlines, his phone was dead at the Mata Navadvip. But every now and then, he'd just pick it up and hear, is there any, put it back down. Every now and then, pick up, put it down, wondering when it will return. One day, he'd pick up the phone, and there was Krishna Ballabh Prabhu, a merchant and landholder there in Vrindavan. And he was telling him that this property adjacent to the Bhajan Kutir Samadhi of Srila Rupa Goswami, he would make available to him. And he said he had others who were willing to pay twice the price or more, but he only wanted it to go to Srila Govinda Maharaj. And Srila Gurudev accepted that, and he said once that, as we know, there's a little courtyard in front of Srila Jiva Goswami, Prabhu Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and you see all these Pushpa Samadhi monuments to various gurus and acharyas, and Srila Gurudev, and many of them sahajya. And Srila Gurudev said, I couldn't tolerate the idea of Srila Guru Maharaj being placed among them. It was horrible for him to think of that. Let me see. So in his reciprocating his heart's desire to glorify his Guru Maharaj, I sometimes would say to him, he got the call from Rupa Goswami. Because someone else may be the agent, but really, where is it coming from? We're saying, no, it was a telephone, a landline that works like this. That's from an objective point of view. Srila Guru Maharaj is always reminded us, we're engaged, you know, in subjective culture. So subjectively, we can make the case that it came down from the higher plane into this plane, reciprocating Srila Gurudev's heart's desire to establish Srila Guru Maharaj in his rightful position. So when we enter that mat and Srila Gurudev's room particularly, but we know, and now they've built so many things. It used to be from his, throw his shutters open, you could see the samadhi of Srila Rupa Goswami and his Bhajan Kutir. Now you cannot, but you cannot ignore the feeling, the presence, knowing that you're 50 meters away or however much it is. It's a palpable presence. You know you're in a highly, a zone of high spiritual concentration. So, considering the location of our mat, there are different ways you could contemplate how to engage in parikrama. There are things that make sense in a linear way in terms of their placement and sequence in a linear sense. And then there are ontological considerations. sambandha, avideya, prayojan, and then considering the location of our mat. So we always begin, I always begin at the Radha Damodar Mandir of Srila Jiva Goswami. And it's perfect because also there is the room, like the Beda Nam contract room of Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. They had a system. A Beda Nam contract means, so they have a room at the Radha Damodar temple. You pay them a one-time price. Sometimes it's monthly, but one-time price. And you have permission to execute bhajan in that room until your demise. At that time, it goes back to the property and they can, another Vaishnava can enter there. Obviously, in the case of Srila Prabhupada, they made an exception in relation to ISKCON that it would just only be for Prabhupada forever. But it's beautiful because you can see in Prabhupada's room, if he would open his doors, he sees Radha Damodar, Radha Vrindavan Chandra, which were the deities of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and do you know the third one? Another set of deities. And also they have Krishna's footprint from Govardhan Hill. So it's, that could be seen from his room. So sometimes from his room he's taking Krishna Nam, chanting Maha Mantra. He's also translating the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the first six chapters of Chaitanya Charitamritam, and numerous other writings. And so it's nice, and there's Rupa Goswami, it's the Rupanuga line, here's Srila Prabhupada, who spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So it's a super auspicious way to begin your parikrama. And we mentioned to the devotees there that in Prabhupada's room, when I was a new member, I had service at ISKCON Press, which preceded the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. And we had an Elmira, or metal cabinet, that double doors, that had manuscripts of Prabhupada from India, and little different, the diary he kept on the ship on his way over, different, his passport, many, and sometimes I had the opportunity to look at these things. I don't know, you know, I see a passport, open it up, there's a picture of Prabhupada, and he has like big tilak, no shirt, but just like the uttar, you know. He's like very intense looking. And it says, where like you have family name, relations, you put somebody in. And it said, father's name. And it said, you know, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So I said, oh, yeah. That and the diary was very interesting. But also, when you see these manuscripts, they're on legal paper. I mean, we think anything related to Prabhupada, that we're scrutinizing everything as being significant or potentially significant. And so I'd be reading the, like, Light of the Bhagavat manuscript, reading that one page. Then see, oh, it's also written on the back. But on the back was all just mundane business things type. And then I realized he didn't have the money to buy fresh paper. Think about that. He doesn't have the money to buy virgin paper. So what he does, because as I said, in India, They haven't thrown anything away for thousands of years. So they have all that paper that business people have used. So that's cheaper than buying new paper. So he'd buy that, turn it around, put that in the typewriter, and on that he's typing Srimad Bhagavatam, Light of the Bhagavat, Chaitanya Charitamritam. Gives you a hint of how minimal his finances were, but at the same time, how big his vision was. And not for self-aggrandizement or self-assertion, any sort of pratishtha, but he's always reflecting back to his first meeting with Srila Saraswati Thakur. And as he said, I met with my Guru Maharaj 10 times. Think about that. 10 times he met with him. But repeatedly, Srila Saraswati Thakur was imploring him and other devotees, but he in particular, to take Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking countries, particularly America. In his final days, he kept saying, oh, we didn't go to America. So in his own writings, when he's parsing the sloka, Bhyavasayatmika Budhi, Akeha Kurunandana of Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, it's what he himself translated as resolute determination, saying what's necessary to the sort of focus that's necessary to be successful in the pursuit of Krishna consciousness. So he called it resolute determination. But to what degree he's quoting Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, who's saying that the order of the spiritual master should become non-different than one's reason for living. And as we can say, we will all think, oh, that could be, you know, a distant aspiration for us. But in the case of Srila Prabhupada, he exemplified it, he personified this dedicating one's life exclusively in the pursuit of the order of the Guru, all one's energy focused on one mission. So that's his mission, that Saraswati Thakur said, take Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking countries, particularly America. So he's focused on a single focus. Right? And what he's doing while he's living there at the Radha Damodar temple, he's doing his spiritual practices every day. He's going to the aarti, chanting Krishna Nam. Maybe you would see him going to the market, buy a cauliflower or some things. And maybe if you observed him in that way, you might think less of him. Or, oh, here's some nice elderly sadhu. In other words, less of him in the sense that you would be misled in underestimating the magnitude of the contribution he was about to make. So we're told Vaishnavera, Kriya Mudra, Vigyeha Nahbujoy. Don't be very cautious in how you observe Vaishnavas and their behavior. So he's going there, doing some marketing, coming. He does his cooking. He had his special pot for cooking. He would keep that when he traveled around the world. It looks like a tiffin, except the bottom, it's like one layer, two, three, four, and a round top. The bottom part, you put the dal. The next one above it has holes in the bottom. That's where you put the vegetables. The next one, holes in the bottom, you put there, it's where you put the rice. And then the top is round. It serves as a cap and also as a wok. So while you're cooking the dal, it steams the vegetables and cooks the rice, and then you're done. You turn the top upside down, put in some ghee, some spices, chaunce the dal, chaunce the vegetables. He used that, and actually he traveled all over the world with that. His servants had to learn how to use that. So very simply living, and we could say he could have if he had justified saying, I'm elderly now, I've tried my best. Because one thing we should remember also is sometimes we think, oh, Prabhupada started preaching in 1965. That's not true. Prabhupada's always preaching. That world-changing preaching started to take place in 65, 66. But he was always preaching, celebrating festivals, sending out invitations, inviting dignitary guests. He's always holding some kind of festival and preaching. But it's relatively modest by what he did later. So still, he's preparing himself. He's making the Bhagavatam. He has so much faith in the order of Saraswati Thakur. So he's saying, I will go to America with, as he did, with a trunk load of, I've seen them before, the trunks, Srimad Bhagavatams, two mridangas, a bunch of kartals, some other paraphernalia. This is like, that's his ammunition for his campaign. The two mridangas, the kartals, a trunk full of Bhagavatams, and you know, a few, very modest paraphernalia. And, but he's there in Vrindavan with this singular focus, and very nicely expressed by Srila Guru Maharaj and the Nikhila Bhuvana Maya Sloka, the last line, Vilasatu Hridi Nityam Bhakti Siddhanta Vani, saying, may the words of Srila Saraswati Thakur and his orders, his wishes, may they Vilasatu Hridi Nityam, Vilas means like play, but like divine play. May they play in our hearts forever. So with that, the internal voice of Sri Guru directing him, he could not ignore that. And as I was going to say, he could have been justified in saying, I've tried, done what I can, but I'm in my final days. I'll stay here at the Radha Damodar temple, chanting the holy name of Krishna, as we see so many people now doing. They're in the final section of their life. Come here, take the name, read more. They're in that kind of mood. Visit, go on parikrama, visit holy places. And then it's understandable. But he, Vilasatu Hridi Nityam Bhakti Siddhanta Vani, the divine voice of Saraswati Thakur is still beating in his heart saying, you're a young, intelligent man. Why don't you take this Krishna consciousness to the English-speaking countries, particularly America? He cannot not hear that, even though he's elderly. And from one point of view, not so fit for this task in an external sense. But what is he doing? He's got this singular focus. He's contacting the lady, Sumati Murarji. She owns a steamship company. I mean, that's the name of it. But what it means is these are cargo ships that go from, they carry cargo from India to America. But on those ships, they have maybe 4-6 rooms. So what he's asking for her is, give me passage in one of those rooms on the cargo ship. And that's nothing for her to do, right? It's not costly or anything. But she's very reluctant to do this because she's thinking, oh, you know, he's such a nice, wonderful sadhu. He's elderly. She doesn't think he can survive the trip. So she's always finding excuses, you know, to delay, defer, until we can only assume that Krishna gave the inspiration in her heart to agree. So she gives Prabhupada passage. He's got his visa, that passport, Father Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, and trunks of Bhagavatam, the Mridanga, and enters the ship in Calcutta. And they give him a little white booklet. It's like around that big, plastic white cover, and it's a little diary for your journey. This journey will take 30 days. It's like the time I remember in Lakta when this lady came and she was giving some donation for Srila Gurudev, and I said, "Where are you from?" And I think it was Khabarovsk or so. And I said, "Oh, how long did it take you to get here?" And she said, "Like 5 days on the train." At first I thought, oh, maybe she made a mistake. You know, like, and I said, "How many days?" She said, "Like 5 or 6 days on a train." And she was getting ready to take that train back. So total like 10 to like 2 weeks on a train. You know. And when I gave that money to Gurudev, he said, "These are very heavy rubles." Said others are giving greater amount, but what she's giving, this, you have to be very careful and cautious how this is used in the service. So when you think about, you know, you go, "Oh, that's a lot of time to be on a train." Prabhupada, 30 days on a boat, where all you, for most of the time, all you see is water. You don't see anything else. And you're not a sailor. Because we say, "Oh, sailors do this." Yeah, but they get used to that. And even it's difficult for them. Just, he puts himself on a boat. This is ultimate self-sacrifice. But it starts off in Calcutta. And Prabhupada is a very methodical, meticulous person on everything. And he keeps accounts. So I'm reading the diary, and it'll say, like, it stops at some port, like down on the southern India, South India, and he gets off and tells what he bought at the market, how much it costs, has the price of each thing. He keeps records like that, which is interesting. But that's the kind of person he is. You know, every day he'd write so many letters in the morning, the secretary would have to type them out, then he'd sign them. Then they all have to be delivered, stamped. You know, he was very efficient too. So I'm reading that. But then the ship leaves the southern tip of India. Now it's just out in the water, on all sides water. And what you see on one page was surprising. Now Prabhupada writing about his inner condition, and he's saying, "Today I'm feeling separate, you know, the ship is plying smoothly and I am feeling separation from my worshipable lords, Radha Damodar, Radha Madan Mohan, Govinda Ji." He starts naming the different deities in Vrindavan. And of course, those are the different deities we will be visiting on the parikrama. But he's actually saying, "I'm feeling separation from them." Right? He's out in the middle of the ocean. And then he has an entry where he says, because you want to, so what's, how is he nourishing himself? He's cooking in that special pot he has and doing that, but how is he nourishing himself spiritually? This is, we call it, the conclusion. The Madhya Leela of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Chaitanya Charitamritam, saying, just eating, that's not how you keep healthy spiritually. He's saying, but you need to relish the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Otherwise, you'll go down. And Prabhupada writes very beautifully there. He says, "Daily I am relishing the nectarine of Sri Chaitanya Leela, the source of my all vitality." There's the secret. I'm relishing Sri Chaitanya Leela, which is the source of my all of my vitality. So that's what is nourishing him and giving him strength to do this. And still, so you would think it would be enough to just survive this journey, arrive in America, and begin preaching. But as we know, Bhavagrahi Janardana, Krishna, he is a bhav consumer. What he's interested in is what is expressed from the heart. And Krishna knows that when the devotees are put into difficulty, or separation combined with difficulty, another factor, they achieve the deepest region of heart, which yields the most superior substance that Krishna is seeking, and he's relishing that. So in the middle of the ocean, and you see in the diary, this like gash across two pages, which covers 2 days at least, Srila Prabhupada has a heart attack, and maybe more than one. And so it looks like, just as Sumati Morarji feared, that this elderly sadhu will pass away in the middle of the ocean in this last-ditch attempt, to fulfill the order of his spiritual master. But then we know later, Prabhupada said he had a dream. And remember, his name, initiated name before sannyasa, was Abhay Charanaravinda. And just like in the song of Govinda Das, what did he say? Abhaya Charanara Vindore Bhaja Hunre Manasri Nandanandana Abhaya Charanara Vindore. Because he's saying this world and life is full of anxiety. They told, what did he say? Kamala Dala Jala Jivana Talamala. I remember seeing in Govinda Dham on the leaf, Anadi Krishna Prabhu was giving me a tour, and they have this lotus pond with thousands of lotus flowers. And as we went nearer to it, there was a lotus leaf. Because in this song, you could think Kamala Dala, that it's talking about the petal of the lotus, but that's not what it is. It's talking about the leaf of the lotus flower, which is big, that big green leaf. And on the leaf, you would see water balls, and they look like mirrors when you look at them. And I was staring at one, and while I looked at it, it just fell off without any prior indication. It just rolled off the lotus leaf, And that's what it's saying in the song. Kamala, Dala Jala, Jivana Tala. Life is like that. 1 minute, it's gonna, and then gone. So, but Abhaya Charanaravindare. But if you take shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna, then you'll become fearless. Right? We also, while we were there, observed the appearance day of Bhakti Bichar Jajavar Maharaj, who was the last person to take sannyas from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And interestingly, it was Saraswati Thakur who proposed to him that he take sannyas. But he, being a simple-hearted, humble Vaishnava, he thought, well, what if I can't live up to this vow? It was putting him in some anxiety, thinking about the future. He was fearful that he'd be able to maintain and so many other things. So he started discussing that with his godbrothers, and some were there and saying, yes, Prabhu, you're right. Maybe you should not go ahead. They were agreeing in that direction. Then he went to Srila Guru Maharaj. And as soon as Srila Guru Maharaj heard his apprehension and the fearfulness he was expressing, Guru Maharaj immediately went to Srila Saraswati Thakur and told him. So then he called for Yajavara Maharaj. What was his name? Sarveshwar Ananda, something Brahmachari went. I forget exactly. Saraswati Thakur said, you will be approaching the Abhaya pod. means the fearless region. You'll be taking shelter there. It's this world that you should be afraid of, not that world. Not the world you'll be approaching by becoming exclusive servitor, embracing the position of a sannyasi. This world is the world you should fear. And he happily agreed and he took sannyas. So in Prabhupada's dream, Krishna is taken over the ship and he says, you know, don't worry, Abhai, like a play on words, don't worry, Abhai, I'm, you know, controlling the ship now. And interestingly, that captain, who's also, he keeps the captain's log, he says that in his 30, 40 years of sailing, suddenly the ocean became like a pond. There are no waves. So the boat's just going so smooth, like some miraculous thing, not to bring any discomfort to Srila Prabhupada. But we see, so Krishna, here's someone willing to put their life on the line. And we can say, in principle, we would think it would be enough, but in fact, he has a heart attack, or more than one, in the middle of the ocean, in pursuance of fulfilling the order of his Guru Maharaj, which is in light of the prediction of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Guru Maharaj says, made this observation, that he wholly emptied himself of any other desire than that of fulfilling the order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And so having wholly emptied himself, he became a vessel that divine power came down, filled him and worked on his behalf. And because of his family line, who are favored by Nityananda Prabhu and some other considerations, he said, he considered him to be a Shaktivesh avatar, specifically of Nityananda Prabhu. Right. Then Srila Prabhupada arrives in Boston before New York. And while he hasn't disembarked yet, they have to wait there a little bit, then go to New York and get off the boat. So he's writing. He writes two poems. One poem called, Markine Bhagavata Dharma, Preaching Bhagavat Dharma in America. And the other poem is called Prayer to the Lotus Feet of Krishna. In the first poem, he talks about what America is like, what the people are like, and what it'll require to convert them to Krishna conception. And it was in 1976, which was the 200th anniversary for America, and we're in Washington, D.C. with Srila Prabhupada. And that temple was run by Brishakapi Prabhu and Sureshwari Didi. And so Prabhupada was there, and it was also celebrating around that time when he came to America, which really was in September, but anyway, we're celebrating many things. So we're reading these poems, the Prabhupada, and he's like listening to his own poems. And this one, Markine Bhagavata Dharma, when he describes what America's like, the people, and Tada Rajas Tamo Bhava Kamo Lobha Dayastye Cheta Etair Anavidam Stitam Satvi Prasidati. They're overcome by the modes of passion and ignorance, etc. And he's listening to this and he started to smile. He said, how could I know? I hadn't got off the boat. That was particularly amusing to him. So, but in there, at the very end, it's very moving. And he says, remember, he still hasn't got off the boat. And he said, but my Lord, this place, like God-forsaken place in a sense, you know, and Kali Yuga in full swing, he said, I imagine you've brought me here for some purpose. So if you've brought me here to dance, then make me dance, O Lord, make me dance. And then he signs, your insignificant beggar A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So that's one poem. But in the other poem, Prayer to the Lotus Feet of Krishna, it's written from his internal point of view. And there, he's saying, remember, in the beginning he said, oh, I'm feeling separation from Radha Damodar and my worshipable Lord so far away from Vrindavan, I depend exclusively on their mercy. Now he's made it to America and he's saying that he's feeling so much separation from Krishna that he cried out to him very intensely. He's saying that he became overwhelmed to the point of where he was crying out to Krishna. And he reveals there, he said, I cannot wait for that day when we will be running and frolicking in the forest of Vrindavan and picnicking on the banks of the Jamuna. And he's saying, my heart is, I want that again. I can't wait for that day. And he said, but, and Guru Maharaj is interpreting that, saying, but my guru, and we understand in Gaudiya ontology, the guru is seen as Radharani's delegation. Saying, my guru has given some order to me. Another way to phrase that is say, Radharani has given an order. She wants some particular seva from me. That is the order of Saraswati Thakur. Radharani has given this order and seva to me. If you, my dear Krishna, will help me fulfill this order, then she will be pleased with you and you will get her association. And I know you want that. So in a very heartfelt, sweet, appealing way, he's actually enlisting Krishna in this. Or like if you wanted a partner, like Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, you realize if I got Krishna on my side, everything will be fine. So Prabhupada thinks, I'm unfit, unqualified to properly execute this order of my guru. Oh, who's the best person I could get to help me? Krishna. If you will help me, then Radharani will be pleased with you and you'll get her association. So in a very sweet and beautiful way, he enlisted Krishna in this seva. And I was reminded, Srila Guru Maharaj was saying that when you decide to dedicate your life to the pursuit of Krishna consciousness, he said, don't expect that the world will hold a parade in your honor. You know, like people are going to come, oh, this is so wonderful. You're giving up the world, family, friends, everything for that. I just can't express my appreciation and support for this decision you've made. This, we're going to get everybody together. We're thinking of doing something in your honor. It's so glorious. He said, rather, what did we learn from Prahlad Maharaj? That in the pursuit of Krishna consciousness, that Guru Maharaj said, prepare yourself for a life of trouble. You know, that's what we learned from Prahlad. Your parents may turn against you, your family, your friends. Maybe not, but they may. Right? Generally they do. It would be the exception where they don't. And there are, you know, we have some people who are children of devotee parents and they have such good fortune. But, so Guru Maharaj said, don't expect they will hold a parade in your honor. So then we see Prabhupada enters America. And interestingly, after 1 year, what he does during that year, he's staying in very modest accommodations, sometimes sharing with people, even non-veg refrigerator. He's got his little shelf, like, you know, please, you know. And he goes to bookstores, and he's always in sannyas vesh, comes in with his Srimad Bhagavatams. I had the good fortune of finding one in a bookstore before I joined, first canto, third volume. They're we used to call them the brown Bhagavatams, if you've ever seen one. But they have like all the Vaikuntha planets Goloka on the cover, a painting he had commissioned, and has a little write-up about him, who he is, and what is the Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, the charm for me when I had that book was like, the printing is crooked. The book even smelled like India. You know, sometimes I would just smell the book. You know, and I think, wow, this is, it smells like another world. And the words, and they weren't like, these books were not, you know, properly edited and many things like that. But there was just this, they were irresistibly charming to read and, you know, worship actually. But he sold some in different stores, tried to have some programs, a few engagements here and there at the YMCA or in Butler, Pennsylvania, different places. And also looked at buildings and thought that would make a good ashram, or wrote back to the God Brothers and any, could you please, you know, here's a great building in uptown Manhattan. It only costs $70,000, you know, which is, you could say is like either 700,000 or 7 million to them. But they, you know, they didn't respond in a very encouraging way. So at the end of 1 year, he's actually, and this shows you it's a cliffhanger. He's thinking, I tried, you know, I made it all the way to America, the whole thing, and it doesn't appear to be happening, or I'm not getting the kind of success that would warrant continuing. Goes down to the Cynthia Steamship Line, they have a chalkboard when they say, when the next vessels are going back to India. So he's actually going to book passage back to India when Dr. Howard Wheeler, who later becomes Hayagriva Prabhu, looks at him and says, are you from India? And Prabhupada said, I mean, the rest is history. He becomes Prabhupada's disciple, editor of all the books. He knows many Allen Ginsberg and influential people, and everything takes a different course. Again, it's right on the verge of not happening, and then it happens. And then we know Prabhupada goes on establishing temples in New York, Los Angeles, Montreal, different places. Then there's 30, 40, 50 centers all over America, different parts of the world. And then he has the ISKCON Press, Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, distributing hundreds of millions of books, temples all over the world. And because as I told, he did those first six chapters of Charitamritam in India, it was Adi Leela Volume 1 was the last book published. Because everything else he did on a dictaphone when the Bhagavatam printing slowed up. So he challenged Rameshwar Maharaj and the devotees in Los Angeles to print all these books. And Rameshwar Maharaj and the devotees accepted the challenge. They printed 17 volumes in 17 months. One more or less 400 page book per month, 17 months in a row. With paintings, everything. It was amazing. But the last one to come out was actually Adi Leela Volume 1. So, and I had just read this. Srila Prabhupada was in Atlanta, Georgia, and we were representing his books to professors there. And I said to him, and it was true, I showed it, you know, with great enthusiasm and eagerness, this one professor, and he said, it is amazing that one man, this sort of output from one man, you know. I said, it is. And so on the morning walk, I told Prabhupada, I just showed this book to, you know, a professor, and he was saying, it's amazing that one man can do this type of publishing output. And Prabhupada stopped, and he said, he started humbly saying, oh, naming, you know, there's Pradyumna and Jayadvaita Maharaj. He started naming other people who were assisting him. And I said, Prabhupada, they know that you have like a team of assistants, but still they are amazed at your output that one man can do this. And Prabhupada stopped, like he had already put his hand, he turned and he looked at me and he said, they are amazed. And his eyes got really big. He goes, I am amazed. And he felt like divine current just passing through him. The head, he saw the, you see the pictures of always massive amounts of chandan on his forehead, like kind of like cool thing. Like the, we have to keep the computer in the room with the air conditioner so it doesn't overheat. So every day, big amounts of sandalwood. And like that slogan, Suvarna Varna Hemango Barangas Chandanagadi Sanyasa Krishtama Shanto Nishta Shanti Parayana. This is in the Mahabharata, Vishnu Sahasranam. It's taken to be like an encrypted reference to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But in time, hearing certain things from Srila Guru Maharaj, making certain observations, I realized you could also render this in relation to Srila Prabhupada. That means you can interpret this verse in such a way as the Mahabharata, the Vishnu Sahasranam, is also predicting his appearance and what he will do. And beginning with that Suvarna Varna, Hemanga, generally means he's like golden colored, but the Suvarna Varna also means the gold merchants. That's this, the line, Prabhupada's family descent in Bengal, and those were the people that were favored by Nityananda Prabhu. Srila Saraswati Thakur reveals this in his commentaries on Chaitanya Charitamritam. So that's the line he came in. And Hemanga, Prabhupada looked golden, radiant, his skin sometimes as if almost translucent, very golden, radiant. Because, you know, and also he's, you know, getting the mustard oil massage every day from his servants. And the Barangas Chandanagadi, sandalwood, always and everywhere, not just on the head, other places too, but particularly he looks very beautiful, decorated with sandalwood. And then sannyasa krishtama shanto, he takes sannyas. This is where he's leaving, withdrawing from family life, vanaprastha, and takes sannyas, prepares himself to fulfill the order of Srila Saraswati Thakur. And this is particularly interesting. That little diary I mentioned from the Sindhya line, it had running heads at the top of each page. And it said, you know, like something like Sindhya Steamship Company, and it said, what is their motto? We carry India's message of peace and goodwill. Right? That was their motto. We carry India's message of peace and goodwill, like Nishta Shanti Parayana. And how can this be a coincidence? What is the name of the boat, the ship that he was on? The Jaladuta. Like we've heard of Rupa Goswami's Hansaduta, means swan messenger. It's a type of poetry in Sanskrit where a swan takes a message to the beloved or is a vehicle messenger. But Jaladuta means the water messenger. So they carry the water messenger, Srila Prabhupada, is carrying India's real actual message of peace and goodwill, which means Mahaprabhu's movement. That's what they do. So it's very mysterious and very peculiarly interesting. So Prabhupada, after all of that, it's 1976. Prabhupada leaves in 1977. So it's the last time he's in America. And there's going to be Rath Yatra Festival in New York City. It's always in San Francisco and Golden Gate Park and being introduced to other places. But to have it in New York City is quite an achievement. And remember, this is where he arrived. And at the time he has, what do you call it, a skyscraper building as a temple. So all of these journalists have been invited to, it's like a press conference, but like an informal one. Prabhupada sitting always on the floor with the cushions and the big pillows, you know, and talking to them, and all the press sitting there like cross-legged and everything. They all have their notebooks and everything. And Prabhupada, he knows how to promote things, right? So, and he knows he's dealing with Americans, how to flatter the ego of the Americans and make some really good propaganda. So he says to them, he goes, America is the most important country in the world. And they're all like, oh, yeah. Then he says, in America, New York is the most important city. They're all New Yorkers. And he said, in New York, Fifth Avenue is the most important street. Anyway, Prabhupada said, on that street, we will be having our festival. They're all going like, oh, we can use that. That's very good. You know, but that's the way he presents. On that street, most important city, most important country, etc. So, and I saw with my own eyes. I invited my parents to come too. They saw Prabhupada. And you see New York's finest, which means the police officer, the street's all closed. The most important street in New York is closed for this parade. And New York City policemen all up and down the streets, Jagannath, Balaram, Subhadra, the chariots going, kirtan with hundreds of devotees. Prabhupada always rode on Subhadra's chariot. He's there. And so you think, he came there penniless. I had something, you know, $10. And as Guru Maharaj said, don't expect they'll have a parade in your honor. There's an exception to that rule, and that was Srila Prabhupada. It's like Krishna's parting gift to him for fulfilling the order of Saraswati Thakur, the prediction of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He has Prabhupada. It's Krishna. Prabhupada's making propaganda for Krishna. But in this instance, Krishna, the parade was for Prabhupada. He thinks it's, and it's true for these other things, but really I believe in my heart, this was for Prabhupada. It was Krishna's like parting gift to him, like to celebrate what he did by spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, to have him ride in the Jagannath Rath Yatra festival down Fifth Avenue. It was just miraculous and unbelievable and a beautiful vision. So that was our first stop on the parikrama. Which now you understand why it's appropriate, because Rupa Nuga line, Rupa Goswami, and then it would be good, start with Prabhupada. Then, and we're Radha Damodar deities and wonderful things. Then we're going to other places and we can discuss at another time.